Thank you. I feel obliged to tell you what a stupid and wrong piece that was.
Wrong?
Dead wrong. I understand you're thinking so. You're a divorce lawyer. Why don't you take an advance in career and become a pimp? I suspect that any divorce attorney such as myself could sue you for that piece and win.
I quoted divorce attorneys.
None I know.
I'm only allowed to quote legitimate sources.
Before leaving, Gillette tried to look haughty, but only succeeded in looking as if he were in the early stages of a sneeze.
Collins Aviation, good morning.
Good morning. I wish to talk with Mr. Stanwyck, secretary, please.
One moment, please.
Beneath his desk, Fletch pried off his sneakers. The linoleum was cool on his bare feet.
Mr. Stanwyck's office?
Good morning. This is Bob Olson of the Chronicle Gazette, Fletch said. We're doing a little women's page feature over here and wonder if you could help us out.
Yes, certainly.
This is just a silly little story of no importance.
I understand.
What we're doing is a piece on who the private doctors are of prominent people around town. We thought it would amuse people.
I see.
I wonder if you could tell us who Mr. Stanwyck's private physician is.
Oh, I don't think Mr. Stanwyck would like to give out that information.
Is he there?
Yes, he just came in a little while ago.
You might tell him what we want. If we print the name of his doctor, Mr. Stanwyck probably will never get another doctor's bill. Remind Mr. Stanwyck that doctors themselves can't advertise.
Yes, I see.
The secretary's laugh indicated a finishing school with office skills. She had a finished laugh.
Hang on a moment, I'll see.
While he was waiting, Fletch took the envelope with 10 $100 bills off his desk and threw it into a drawer.
Mr. Olson, Mr. Stanwyck laughed and said it was all right to tell you that his private physician is Dr. Joseph Devlin of the Medical Center.
That's great.
The man arranges for his own murder on Thursday night and on Friday morning laughs at someone's wanting to know who his private physician is. At least Stanwyck had good blood pressure.
When will the piece appear in the newspaper, Mr. Olson?
Well, we'll have to get a photograph of Dr. Devlin.
Can't you guess when? We'd love to see it.
Friday of next week, Fletch said, I think.
Oh, that's fine. I'll tell Mr. Stanwyck so he'll be sure to buy the Chronicle Gazette that day.
Right. Be sure to buy the Chronicle Gazette, Friday of next week.
Fletch hung up the phone of the News Tribune. Medical Center, Medical Center. Alan Stanwyck expects to be murdered next Thursday night. Failing that, he expects to pick up the Chronicle Gazette Friday morning to read a reference to his private physician.
Ah, life. Neither was true.
553-9696.
Medical Center, good morning.
Dr. Joseph Devlin's office, please.
One moment.
Dr. Devlin's office, good morning.
Good morning. Dr. Devlin, please.
Dr. Devlin is seeing a patient. May I be of any assistance?
I need to speak with Dr. Devlin himself, I'm afraid.
Oh, dear.
We are the carriers of the life and health policies of Mr. Alan Stanwyck.
Oh, yes.
A little problem has come up regarding these insurance policies.
One moment, sir. I'll see if Dr. Devlin is free.
Fletch could hear the nurse, receptionist, secretary, whatever, saying,
"It's Mr. Stanwyck's insurance company. They have some question."
Another phone was picked up instantly.
"Yes?"
"Good morning, Dr. Devlin. As you know, we're the holders of the policies on the life of Mr. Alan Stanwyck."
"Yes?"
"Who is a patient of yours?"
"In a manner of speaking."
"What does that mean?"
"Well, I'm the Collins' family doctor. John Collins and I were roommates in college. Stanwyck married his daughter, Joan Collins, so I guess I'm his physician. I usually only see him socially."
"How long has Mr. Stanwyck been your patient, doctor?"
"Since he moved out here. Really, since before he married Joan." "I'm not being very specific, am I? About 6 years. I could look it up if you like."
"No, that's all right, doctor. We're just reviewing some of these cases here. As you know, Mr. Stanwyck is insured for an enormous amount of money."
"Yes, I do know."
"Why is that, by the way? Why is he insured for so much?"
"Oh, that's John's doing. The kid, Alan, loves to fly these experimental planes. You know, he was in the Air Force before he went to business school. He kept up his flying and jumps at the chance to fly any ridiculous-looking thing that somebody thinks will go up in the air. I guess his continuing to do so means something to the company, Collins Aviation."
"Would there be a $3 million loss to the family if Mr. Stanwyck were killed?"
"I don't know. I suppose so. The stock would drop, and the family owns most of it. He's the fair-haired boy of the company, and there isn't any other."
They would have management difficulties, personnel difficulties. Yes, I suppose the family could lose that much if Allen were killed.
I see. But frankly, I don't think that's the reason for the policy.
Oh?
John put that policy on him to try to get him to stop flying these gym-cracked planes after Julia was born. He thought the premiums would convince Allen he should give up flying. I believe John mentioned that to me over a drink one day at the Rackets Club. I had said that much insurance on somebody would make anybody a target for murder. John didn't think my impugning his daughter was funny.
Who is Julia?
The granddaughter. I mean Joan's daughter, Joan and Allen. Cute little tyke.
Mr. Stanwyck is still flying?
Oh, yes, every once in a while we hear of a near scrape. Keep the insurance on.
When was the last time you examined Mr. Stanwyck, Doctor?
Not since before you guys took him over. You're giving him a complete physical every 6 months. How many times a year can a man be examined?
You haven't seen him at all?
As I say, just socially. At John's for drinks or dinner at the club.
What sort of shape would you say he's in?
Oh, I couldn't say without examining. From seeing him at the pool and in the locker room, I can say he's a slim, well-built young man, muscular, and apparently perfectly healthy. He drinks and smokes moderately. He's built like a 20-year-old boxer. Except for his wind, he could go 15 rounds with anybody.
Is it possible he could be seeing any doctor other than you?
Well, anything's possible.
A specialist?
I don't know who would refer him to a specialist if your insurance doctor didn't. And if he became aware of a problem, he'd most likely refer him back to me, and I'd refer him to a specialist if he needed one. If the question is, have I referred him to a specialist lately, or ever, the answer's no.
Thank you, Doctor. Sorry to take your time.
May I ask the reason for this inquiry?
We have to do a summary investigation of these large carriers periodically.
Well, $3 million is a hefty amount of insurance. That much insurance on a man would change his whole way of life, I would think.
Or his way of death, Doctor.
Chapter 4
Library. I asked for the clips on Allen Stanwyck at 8:15 this morning. It is now 10:45. What the hell's the matter with you people? Is this Mr. Fletcher?
It is.
The chief librarian wants to speak with you.
Fletch had been pleased to get the photo file on Stanwyck before the chief librarian had arrived for work at 9.
Fletcher?
Yes?
We have the clips on Allen Stanwyck down here for you any time you want to pick them up.
Terrific. Such cooperation. I've been waiting 2 hours while you guys have been playing games.
Running a morgue is no game, Fletcher. We are not running a delivery service. You have to come down and get the file yourself.
I said thank you.
And you have to sign out the file yourself. I've had enough of your denials that you never took something that simply disappeared after it was delivered to you.
I'll be right down. Try not to have the out-to-lunch sign up when I get there.
Fletch was halfway down the corridor to the library before he realized he'd forgotten to put his sneakers back on.
I would have brought the file to you myself, Mr. Fletcher, but Mr. Osborne said not to.
The great round frames to her eyeglasses made the girl look almost attractive.
Fuck Mr. Osborne.
He has the file.
Osborne had a large red nose and always looked hungover. He'd been a good reporter once.
Here's where you sign, Fletch. Thank you very much, and here's your file.
Shitty piece you did last week on the bookie joints.
Sorry.
My joint was closed all week. Couldn't make a bet anywhere in town.
Good for what's left of your character.
I keep track of the races. I figure you lost me about $500.
I'll send you a check. I get paid so much.
I'm just saying thanks very much.
Any time I can do you a favor.
You can. Fuck off.
Return this file before you go home, sweetheart, or I'll report you.
I am Fletcher, reporter.
For now.
The girl with the nice glasses looked at his bare feet and smiled.
Fletcher!
Clara Snow was in the corridor.
For Christ's sake, Fletcher!
Beige suit, alligator accessories, all trim and proper for a trim and proper day.
You just getting in, Clara? For Christ's sake, Fletcher, jeans and a t-shirt are bad enough. Can't you wear shoes in the office?
I've been here since 7:30.
You're not supposed to be here at all. You're supposed to be at the beach.
I told you last night I was coming up.
And I told you not to come.
I had to do some research.
I don't give a damn. I told you not to leave the beach until you had that story. Do you have the story?
No.
Fletcher?
In the dark of the corridor, her face was clearly purple.
"I'll talk to you later. I'm late for firing someone. Someone else."
"What, did you and Frank oversleep?"
"That's not funny. It's not even amusing."
"Well, that's your problem."
Fletch spread the file over his desk. The clips on Alan Stanwyck were from various sections of the newspaper, mainly society and financial, but also sports and run of paper. On each clip, Stanwyck's name was circled in red the first time it appeared. Fletch snapped on the tape recorder he had brought from the passenger seat of his MG. His bare feet on the desk, he leaned back in his swivel chair. 11 a.m., Friday, the murder mystery. So far, we've established only a few things. First, from the picture files at the News Tribune, I've established that the man I met last night who brought me to the Stanwyck house was Alan Stanwyck. Second, he is executive vice president of Collins Aviation, married to Joan Collins, and has one child, Julia, age hopefully somewhat less than 6. His private physician and family friend, Dr. Joseph Devlin of the Medical Center, confirms that Stanwyck is insured for $3 million. The reason Devlin offers for the heavy insurance is that Stanwyck's father-in-law and company president, chairman of the board, wishes to discourage Stanwyck from continuing to fly experimental planes. So far, the discouragement induced by heavy premiums hasn't worked. Stanwyck is still flying. So far, we've not had a reliable check on Stanwyck's health, nor do I think we're going to get one. Devlin pleaded ignorance regarding Stanwyck's physical condition, which is a queer thing for a family physician to do unless he were covering himself. And most significantly, the doctor indicated that Collins Aviation stock would fall if word got around that Alan Stanwyck is terminally ill. It's a safe bet the dear old family doctor and friend has a large slice of his savings in Collins Aviation. It would be to his benefit to lie and to give Stanwyck all the time possible to put his house in order. Therefore, it is unconfirmed and probably unconfirmable whether or not Alan Stanwyck has terminal cancer. To me, he looked a healthy man, but I'm not better at medical diagnosis than I am at safe-cracking, to everyone's disappointment. Leaning over the clips spread out on his desk, Fletch worked the on-off button on the tape recorder microphone. Let's see, from the News Tribune clips, the Alan Stanwyck file, we have the following. Engagement is announced, Joan Collins to Alan Stanwyck, November, 6 years ago at a big bash at the Rackets Club. She is the daughter of John and Marion Collins, the only child, graduated from the Hills High School, Goddard Junior College, and took a year at the Sorbonne. Won tennis juniors when she was 15 and 16. Since her year in France, worked in the International Department of Collins Aviation. The lady sounds dull. Alan Stanwyck, son of Marvin and Helen Stanwyck, Nonhegan, Pennsylvania. Colgate College, Bachelor of Arts degree, Captain United States Air Force, flew 24 missions in Indochina. Purple Heart, graduated from Wharton Business School. At the time of the engagement, he was Assistant Vice President of Sales for Collins Aviation. January 1st, it is announced on the financial page that Alan Stanwyck is named Executive Vice President of Collins Aviation. The old man wanted to see how the boy worked out as a big man in the office before finding out how he worked out as a son-in-law. In April, Alan Stanwyck announced a multi-million-dollar government contract for Collins Aviation. Big wedding in June at the Collins family home in the Hills. Biographies are the same, but there's no reference to Stanwyck's family attending the wedding. Best man is Bert Eberhardt, Colgate graduate, same year as Stanwyck. The Stanwycks, it is announced, Joan Stanwyck, Junior League, Symphony friend. A dinner dance benefit of the Symphony at the Rackets Club, in fact, once a year, each October. Julia Collins, Stanwyck born in March, the year after the wedding, all very proper. But interesting. She's here, she's there, she's everywhere. At first, after becoming Mrs. Alan Stanwyck, teas, lunches, dinners, openings, cocktails. Yet either her activity declined steadily, or the society writers didn't find her very good copy. Which would be unusual, as she is Nay Collins and the average American blonde who takes a good picture. Apparently she's done very little the last 6 months. Oh, Mrs. Stanwyck, why have you withdrawn at 30? Alan Stanwyck, sails as navigator on his father-in-law's yacht, the Colette, in the Triangle race every year, never won, never placed, skippered by John Collins. A sailing as well as a tennis-playing family. A very rich family. Alan Stanwyck becomes member of Rackets Club Executive Committee, 3 years, treasurer Rackets Club the last 3 years, makes it to finals tournaments in both tennis and squash, never wins, never places. Becomes a member of the Urban Club. Reads a paper urging city police to return to foot patrols. Key phrase is, get the cops out of their cars and back into the community. Yay, Stanwyck. The police chief answers, the mayor answers, people listen to Alan Stanwyck. The next year, the paper he delivers to the Urban Club is in defense of jet noise around Collins Aviation. In answer to an earlier paper read to the Urban Club by my boss, News Tribune editor-in-chief Frank Jaffe. Wonder who wrote it for him. Probably Clara Snow over a cup of Ovaltine. No one answered Stanwyck that time. Stanwyck speaks on F-111. He's in favor of them. Stanwyck flies F-111 simulator. Stanwyck flies this and Stanwyck flies that. Stanwyck tests Collins' cold-weather private plane equipment in Alaska. Stanwyck honored by U.S. aviation writers. Stanwyck, Stanwyck, Stanwyck. More of the same. I see why his father-in-law married him. There are no flies on Stanwyck. If there were, short of murder, somehow I doubt our Sterling Journal would print them. The telephone rang. Fletch said into it, "So glad you called." "Fletch, can't you do anything right, like grow up?" "Clara, darling, you sound relaxed and subdued, just like after sex. You just fired someone." "As a matter of fact, I just did." "Who?" "A kid in the city room. He'd been calling people up and asking them stupid questions, saying he was someone from the Associated Press." "Really? How awful. I always tell people I'm from the Chronicle Gazette myself." "I wouldn't be surprised." "How did you catch the jerk?" "He called the French embassy in Washington and asked them how to spell Elan. We got the bill." "What awful snopes you are." "He admitted it." "And you fired him after he admitted it?" "We can't have people doing that. AP complained." "Jesus, I'll never confess to anything again." "Fletcher, we have to talk. Are you up to it?" "That's why I thought we should have lunch in the cafeteria. Put your shoes on." "You're not taking me out?" "I wouldn't be seen in public with you. Even a drugstore lunch counter wouldn't let us in the way you dress." "If I had Frank's income." "Upstairs in the cafeteria, at least people will understand I'm eating with you because I have to." "You don't have to. I have work to do." "I have several things to talk to you about, Fletcher. Might as well get it over with, including your bronze star." "My bronze star?" "See you upstairs. Put your shoes on." Chapter 5. Clara Snow had ordered an uncut bacon lettuce tomato sandwich on toast. When she bit into it, the two edges of toast near her Fletch gaped as if about to bite him. "Tell me what I've always wanted to know, Clara, and somehow never expected to find out. How is our editor-in-chief, Frank Jaffe, in bed?" "Fletch, why don't you like me?" "Because you don't know what you're doing. You don't know anything about this business." "I've been employed in this business a lot longer than you have." "As a cooking writer? You know nothing about hard news. You know nothing about features. You know nothing about the mechanics of this business." Speaking like a schoolmarm trying to coax a boy full of puberty toward the periodic tables, she said, "Are you sure you don't resent me just because I'm a woman?" "I don't resent women. I rather like women." "You haven't had much luck with them." "My only mistake is that I keep marrying them." "And they keep divorcing you." "I don't even mind you're going to bed with the editor-in-chief. What I do mind is you're being made an editor, my editor, solely because you're going to bed with the editor-in-chief, when you are totally unqualified and, I might add, totally incompetent. Go to bed with Frank if you like. Anything to keep the bastard reasonably sober and relaxed. But your accepting an editorship in bed when you are unqualified is thoroughly dishonest of you." Even in the cafeteria light, the skin over Clara's cheekbones as she stared at him was purple. She bit into the sandwich and the toast yawned at Fletch. He chewed his calf's liver open-mouthed. "Such principle," she said, sucking coke from a straw. "You can't tell me you haven't made every strung-out little girl on the beach." "That's different. That's for a story. I'll do anything for a story. That's why I put penicillin in my expense account."
"You do?"
"Under telephones."
"What Frank and I do together and what our personal relationship is none of your damned business, Fletcher."
"Fine, I'll buy that. Just leave me alone and leave my goddamn copy alone. You chopped hell out of my divorce equity story and made me look like a raving idiot."
"I had to make changes in it and you were away on a story. I couldn't get in touch with you."
"It came out totally unbalanced, thanks to you, bitch editor. If I were a divorce lawyer in our circulation area, I would have sued the hell out of me by now. You opened me and the newspaper wide for suit, besides making me look like an incompetent."
"I tried to get in touch with you." "Leave my copy alone. You don't know what you're doing."
"Want coffee?"
I never take stimulants. For now, Fletch, we have to work together. Until you build enough of a case against me to get me fired, right?
Maybe.
Now, please tell me how you are doing on the drugs on the beach story.
There are drugs on the beach.
Lots?
On that particular stretch of beach, lots.
Hard drugs?
Very.
Who are the people there?
The so-called kids on the beach are divided into two groups. The first group are drifters, kids on the road, alienated, homeless, wanderers, usually incapable of permanent relationships. Some of them are just sun worshippers, but if they are, they case this particular stretch of beach and move on. The kids who stay are there for the drugs, because there's a source there somewhere of good, clean junk. Some of these so-called kids are 40 years old, although others aren't, like Bobby.
Tell me about Bobby.
Jesus, she's been listening. Bobby is as cute as a button, only sexier. She is 15, blonde, with a beautiful, compact little body.
Have you been making it with her?
She needed some place to crash.
A 15-year-old, and you talk about me.
She came out with a guy older than I am, originally from Illinois. Daddy's a dentist. She fell in love with this guy passing through the local coffee shop, packed a knapsack, and came with him. Once she was on the beach and thoroughly hooked, he wandered off. She was hooking when I met her.
How are you paying for her?
Expense account, under breakfast and lunch.
Aren't you afraid of the law, Fletcher, a 15-year-old?
If there's no one to complain for a kid, the law don't give a shit.
Fletcher's rule.
The second group of kids on the beach are the local teenagers. They show up after school in their stripped Volkswagens with surfboards and make deals with Daddy's hard-earned bread. The fuzz care a lot more about the local kids, as might be expected. In fact, one kid in particular, a kid named Montgomery, they pick up every week, yank him down for questioning. His dad is important in the town or something. Regular as clockwork. But he shows up again almost immediately, beat up and smiling.
Why did the kids go to that beach?
Because there's a source there.
Who is the source?
An older drifter called Vatsyayana. I'd say he's in his mid-30s, balding and bearded. Oddly enough, he's got kindly eyes, desperately skinny. The local kids call him Fat Sam.
So why haven't you a story if you know this much?
Because I don't know what Fat Sam's source is. I can't figure it out. He never seems to leave the beach. I spent 10 days tailing him. All he seems to do is sell, sell, sell. I know where his stash is. It's in a chink of the seawall. When word passed that Fat Sam was getting low, I kept my eyes on the stash for 36 hours. 1, Fat Sam didn't leave the beach. 2, no one else went near his stash. After 36 hours, the supply was up again. Rationing was over. I can't figure it out.
You missed the contact.
Thanks.
You've been on the story 3 weeks.
That's not so much.
So why don't we just run what we've got? Put Fat Sam out of business.
Who cares about Fat Sam? The thing would start up again within a month. If you were any kind of a journalist, Clara, you would know we do not have a story until we have Fat Sam's source.
You've got to stop somewhere. I mean, his source must have a source. Do you plan to follow the sources back to Thailand or some such place?
Maybe.
You've got pictures of Fat Sam dealing, right?
Right.
Let's run with it.
Negative. You'll get the story when there is one. Putting one little pusher behind bars for 12 hours is not my idea of journalism.
Frank is anxious.
You're in charge of relieving Frank's anxieties.
I wish I could have dessert, she said.
Fletch was eating a strawberry shortcake with whipped cream. Clara said quickly,
"There's a matter of insubordination, disobedience."
Fletch put a perfect balance of strawberry shortcake and whipped cream on his fork.
"I told you not to leave the beach today. 1, we want you to stay there until that story is done. 2, we don't want you to blow your cover. Whoever Fat Sam's source is could be wise to you by this time, or suspicious. He could be watching you. All you needed to do was jump into your Alfa Romeo, or whatever it is you drive, and speed up to the News Tribune, which you have done, and you are dead.
Good shortcake. It's an MG.
What?
MG.
I don't understand you.
My car. It's an MG.
Oh. You may be dead.
I'll get the story in first.
Do you think you should go back to the beach?
Sure.
Will you be safe?
Come with me and find out.
No, thanks. But I do wonder, Fletch, if we hadn't ought to tell the local police that you're down there.
who you are and what you're doing. Fletch put down his fork and sat back in his chair. His look was meant to terrify.
If you do that, Clara, you'll be dead before me. I will kill you, make no mistake.
We're responsible for you, Fletcher.
Then be responsible, goddammit, and shut the fuck up. You never blow a story to anyone at any time, ever. Christ, I wish I didn't have to talk to you. You're such an idiot.
All right, Fletcher, calm down. People are watching.
I don't give a shit.
I won't talk to the police yet.
Don't talk to the police or anyone else ever. If I need help, I'll ask for it.
All right, Fletcher. All right, all right, all right.
Stupid bitch.
Which brings up the last matter. Your bronze star.
What about it?
While you've been gone, not only have thousands of sleazy lawyers hired by your dozens of ex-wives been prowling the corridors ready to leap at you, but the Marine Commandant's office has been calling as well.
So what?
You won a Bronze Star.
Years ago.
You never picked it up.
Right.
May I ask why not?
Such a thing doesn't belong in a pawn shop.
What do you mean?
Well, that's where they all end up, isn't it?
I don't see why.
You don't have so many ex-wives.
You are going to pick up the Bronze Star.
I am not. It's all arranged. There's to be a ceremony next Friday, a week from today, in the Commandant's office at the Marine Base, and you're going to be there in a suit and tie and shoes.
What the hell is this to you? This is private business.
It is not private business. You are I.M. Fletcher, star writer of the News Tribune, and we are going to run you smiling modestly in all editions Saturday.
You are like hell.
We are. What's more, the Marine Commandant is going to have his full public relations staff, including photographers, there.
No.
And we're going to try to make a wire story out of it and tell the whole world both about your exploits and the modesty that has kept you from picking up such a high honor all these years. We won't tell them you really haven't picked it up just because basically you're a slob.
I won't be done with the beach story by then.
You will turn in your beach story, whatever it looks like, with pictures by 4 o'clock Thursday afternoon. We will run it in the Sunday paper with a little sidebar saying, News Tribune reporter I.M. Fletcher received the Bronze Star Friday, etc.
You will do nothing of the sort.
Frank has decided. The publisher has agreed.
I don't care. I haven't.
There is the matter of insubordination. You left an assignment when you were told clearly not to.
I won't do it.
I'll put it more simply, Fletcher. You have the beach story in, complete, Thursday afternoon at 4, and be in the Marine Commandant's office next Friday morning at 10, or you're fired, and I, for one, will cheer.
I bet you will.
You're an obnoxious prick.
I sell newspapers.
You heard me, Fletcher. Thanks for wearing your shoes to lunch.
I didn't.
Chapter 6.
Fletcher, this is Jack Carradine. I tried to call you earlier, but apparently you were out to lunch.
I just ran upstairs to get bitten.
What?
I was in the cafeteria getting chewed out.
I have some information for you regarding Alan Stanwyck, but before I give it to you, I'd like to know what you want it for. The financial department of this newspaper can't be totally irresponsible.
Of course, I understand. Fletch switched the telephone to his left ear and picked up a pen.
The truth is, he lied, we're thinking we might do a feature story on who the most highly, I should say heavily insured people are in this area, and why they are so heavily insured.